so what's the solution? What's the solution? So you see one thing. You see, that's why I think Rasul Salanta, that is the reason, really, that Rasul Salanta created the whole Sheet Samosa. He created the whole Sheet Samosa because of this. Because of this Chazal. Because he saw in his time, guys with people with big lungs on him, and they were mushkasim and midas. They had these three qualities. Straight to Rasha v'gatzerua. That's why he said that. You see, the Torah is not enough. And he said, you must have musa. That's why he created all sheets and musa. But the truth of the matter is that we don't find that his sheets and musa was, he was positing a certain psychological mechanism which he maintained worked, and which psychologically, in his day, he studied a lot of psychologists. And he thought that it was a good method. But in terms of further development in psychology, it doesn't seem to be that everybody agrees with that. That method is really the appropriate method. But at any rate, what do you see from Chazal? From Chazal, you see, the Gemara says, Barasi Yetzar, Barasi Torah Tavla. So you see, the Torah has to be the antidote. So how could it be that it's Shot the Rush of Agas Ruach? How could it be Shot the Rush of Agas Ruach? That should be the result. And he's a great Dayan, he's a great Chacham of Fopo. I mean, people give him a lot of covet. Everybody, what's the halachically? I mean, halachically, there's no question that you'd have to stand up for him. I mean, he's a great Chacham, he's a great Chacham. As a matter of fact, Asal Haracha Rabbah, she puts you in a strange situation. Asal Haracha Rabbah. Meantime, if this person's a great scholar, so he's Shait the Rush of Agas Ruach. I mean, it's a strange kind of phenomenon. How does a person deal with that? It's a difficult dilemma. You can place a person in a difficult dilemma. And we have to respect his chachma. There's no question about that. We have to respect his chachma. But the answer is like this. See, if you respected the person himself, it would be a terrible thing. Because it would come out that you're respecting your Shait the Rosh Hashanah. But the point is, we respect the Talmud Chacham only for his chachma. We respect him for his chachma. Asa lahar achar rabo, that's something else. You can't be mahar. Person is not supposed to look for reasons why his Rebbe did this or his Rebbe did that, and say that he did this because he's a Russia, that this is his emotions, because not on his level. It doesn't make any sense that you should be able to judge him. You can't judge him. But nevertheless, insofar as his chachma is concerned, the chachma we respect. We respect the chachma. He can have imperfections. It's amazing. He can even be a shaykh to Rosh Hashanah. But insofar as his chachma is concerned, we're mechuyev to be mechabed him, because the chachma reflects HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chachma reflects HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the person himself can fall prey. It's an amazing thing. I mean, it's not something you should publicize, but it's an amazing thing. But you see, it's in the Chazal that a person could be the greatest Talmud Chacham. I mean, Chacham Gadol Mefopo, and it'll be a Shait the Rosh Hashanah. It's an amazing thing. In terms of his perfection, he may be on a very low level. He may be in very low, he may be even lower than the people that he's over. That's what Rabbi Moshe Feinstein one time said. He said, Olam Hafach Reisi. He said, Olam Hafach Reisi. That's what I said. He said, the Gemara says that one of the Amorayim saw the next world. So he saw Olam Hafach Reisi. It says, Tachtonim Lamaila Valyonim Lamata. That the ones that are on top in this world are on the bottom in the next world. The ones that are on the bottom in this world are on the top in the next world. Exactly the opposite. But Moshe Feinstein gave an example. He says, one person, searching for knowledge, and he tries very hard. He gains a small amount of knowledge. In this world, he's a nothing. Another person has a terrific mind, and he gets a lot of covet in this world. And in the next world, if his motivations, if he's not really perfected, so in the next world he's down. Why should find someone that says that? It's an amazing thing. So what is the answer to the dilemma, though? It seems to be a problem. If Torah is the perfection, this Chazal is really the imperfection of the great Talmud Chacham. The imperfection of the great Talmud Chacham. No matter how great a Talmud Chacham could be, Gadol Chacham, Gadol Mefopo. Still could be Shaita Rasha V'Gasarach.
It would be a Chacham.
It means really, the truth of the matter is like this. Without Torah, there is no perfection. There is no perfection. It's impossible. With Torah, it could be he's not perfected. It could be he's not perfected. See, the purpose, the whole idea of Torah is that the limud of Torah has to lure the individual. It's a process. That's the way the Ibn Ezra explains it in Mishlei. That the experience of Torah has to lure the person towards the appreciation, has to really seduce him, the Chachmas HaTorah. And if the person is seduced by Torah, then he reaches perfection. But if the seduction doesn't take place, and everything that he is doing is only another means to satisfy the instinctual, he could be a tremendous chacham, and he could still be shot the Rosh of a Gazruach. You cannot have perfection without Torah. Impossible. But with Torah, if the process doesn't take properly, he could still be on a very low level. He could be a shaita rush of a gazruah. It's an amazing thing, but that's what Chazal said. So the knowledge of Rasul Salanta was right in his assumption. So you see that even though the person could be a great Talmud Chacham, he could still be so far from perfection. He's a shaita rush of a gazruah, extremely far. But nevertheless, insofar as Kavod HaTorah is concerned, that's a halachic thing. It's a halachic thing. It's a halachic institution. We can't know what's in a person's mind. We can't know if a person's perfected or not. Only God knows. Ain't done yechid yalecha. But the only thing is that insofar as the Gavra is concerned, he could still be on a tremendously low level. Why? Because the Torah didn't perfect him. The Torah was never really seduced by the Torah. There was no ava. I use that word, because Shlomo Melech uses that word. Shlomo Melech says that the concept of kicholas ava on it, like a love affair. It means he's completely, all his emotions are taken over by the appreciation of the Chachma. That's the level. If he doesn't reach that level, then he's still subject to be a Shoyte Rosh of a Gasaruch. That's the Chazal. It's a Chil Hashem. It just says Gasli. What does the man do? Gasli Bavaro. He gives a description, an example of Rani Yonah. He says, Kideshi Yiru Ha'olam, you see, what is the imperfection, though? I would like to elaborate a little more on the imperfection. He says like this. Rabbeinu Yonah describes it very nicely. He says like this. The chirotza listarer, since he wants power and recognition. Libo gasbohara, why? Kidei sheyiru ha'olam sheposek esadin mehera. Because the world should see that he paskins very quickly. In other words, like he doesn't want, you'll see, you know, he wants to show immediately, right away he gives the answer, immediately. That's a tremendous ego thing. And people are very impressed by that. You ask somebody a question and he has to think, it's not as impressive as asking a question and throws it out right away. Wow, look at that. See? So that's one of the things that impresses a person very much. He's aware of this. He's aware of this. So he says, Ulaharaslam kiyu sheposik asdin mehera, Ulaharaslam kiyu chacham v'yimnu shofet v'odon aleihem. What is it? What is the mistake of this individual? What is the mistake of this individual? What is the main thing to me? I mean, it's shota. That's the most important thing. That means it's out of reality. I mean, Rosh of Gasruach. Gasruach is the drive. Is the drive. It shows he's overpowered by Gasas Haruach. His underlying motivation is Gasas Haruach. He wants recognition. But what is the big mistake? What is the mistake of the person? What's the mistake of the person? Mistake of the person is one thing. That for him, reality is the people. That's the mistake. That's the mistake. He only has one reality. The only reality he has is the world. There's a yiru ha'olam, sheposek as a din mehera, ulaharas lam kichachim yinu shefan olam. There's only one reality. The reality is what people think. There is no other reality then. So it comes out that there's a certain tragic case of a Talmud Chacham, where no matter how much Chachma he gains, he can't make that break. He can't make the break from the reality of the people. You see, the people are the underlying, everything he does, sof kol sof, is way people can think. It's a very lonely kind of move that a person has to make in order to achieve real perfection. And that is to recognize that there's another reality, God's reality, that has nothing to do whatsoever with any kind of recognition from people in this world. You see? And I think that's why most all the Chachamim, whether they were Chachmei HaKabbalah and the philosophers, they all agreed on one thing, one institution. It's an institution not practiced too much, but they all agreed on one institution. The Chachmei HaKabbalah and the philosophers, the Ram mentions in the Mar Nevuchim, Chachmei HaKabbalah was very big on it. But what it is his bodhidus. His bodhidus. His bodhidus means that a person goes away alone, all alone, and he's misbodhid. Even the Rambam in the Moran Vucha mentions it too. Why? Because what is his bodhidus? His bodhidus means a person that can't tolerate to be alone. Most people, when they want to have a good time, they want to be with other people. Why? Because other people is the reality for them. That's the reality. Without the other person, what is it worth? How many things would a person do if, for himself in the terms of taiva if nobody else was around? Very, very few. So most people, the reality is always the other people. As both of this means a person goes alone, off by himself, completely alone. What is the purpose of this bodhidus? What essentially is bodhidus? What does it accomplish? This bodhidus accomplishes one thing. It means that he's in the realm of reality that has nothing to do with human beings. And he recognizes that perfection and achievement insofar as his own personal perfection is concerned is, even if no one in the world ever will recognize, and on the contrary, that it doesn't diminish at all from his perfection. It's just the opposite. It's because the world will not recognize the true perfection. He can live a life completely alone on this earth, not be noticed by any human being, and be satisfied that he's lived the greatest possible life for himself. That is the highest level of perfection. Highest level of perfection. Or the Rav reminds one thing, what does the Rav say? Everything that a person is taught, directly and indirectly, in his society. Of course, in society, everything is always how society recognizes. The great Talmud Chacham has to be able to make that break. Difficult break to make. It could be made by certain few people in generations totally. That's like Yechid Olam. It could be made to a certain degree. But there's a tragic case where it can't be made. And that's the case of the Talmud Chacham that's a Shota Rosh HaGasruach. Can't make that the break. What I'd like to add. That point is like this. That I would say, there's one more thing like that. You know, there's a lot of discussion among philosophers as to what courage is. And most courage, upon analysis, turns out to really be cowardice. I'll give you an example. Like a person, let's say, is in a situation if he's a coward, he could save his life. He run away. But he's in a war, you know, he's on the battlefront. And if he's a coward, he could run away. But he could save his life. But he can't do it. Why? What really stops him? What's the main thing that stops him? There's only two possibilities. One possibility is that he wants to get a medal. But that person's in the sugar now. Because the chances of him doing that, to sacrifice his life for an accident, I mean, his life is his essence. The medal is only an accident in life. So to satisfy the essence for the accident, it's dumb crazy. So that person's dumb a fool. Now the other person, the more rational kind of brave person, is the person who simply can't face either himself or society, and himself means society, basically. Just a question of whether it's society out there or society up here. But it's basically he can't face the idea of running away. So actually he's a coward. So his bravery is because he's afraid to face something. So it's total cowardice. You see, so he's the greatest coward. And yet he gets awarded the medal for bravery. But the real definition of courage is one thing, I would say. Say, what is Yadis's answer? Plato remains a question about courage. What is Yadis's answer? What would Yadis say courage is? Courage is one thing. Courage is the ability to live in the ultimate, to move away from the societal support, the support of society, to move away from the support of society and live in reality without any concern for the support of society. That is the true courage. That's the courage of only one person can have that kind of courage. That's the great Talmud Chacham. Persons in the ground from Pasla have courage. Only a great Talmud Chacham can have that courage.
Right.
A couple of points, Hank. The one question is that it says that a person that is gas libo bahara. Okay, gas libo bahara. Yeah. As a person that has complete confidence in din. Person who runs to din, who enjoys being a Baal Hara. So Chazal say he has three defects. He's a Shota, he's a Rasha, and he's a Gasara. So Shota means because he's outside of reality. A Rasha because he doesn't have any concern for the people that he's judging. And it got you up because that's basically what is the motivation, the reason why he's being a chote, is because he's a gasruach. He suffers from egomania. So the question, of course, is that why do you say that he has all three? Why don't you say that either one? Let's say the man is a gasruach, and that's it. He's haughty. That's the main defect. The emotional defect is gasruach, the way Rabbeinu Yonah describes it. That his interest is in how he impresses people. That's his major concern. That's his sole concern. So everybody would say he's a gasruach, but why do you say he's a shote in Russia? Well, you could say he's a shote. He's out of reality. He thinks he's infallible. So he thinks he's infallible, so he's out of reality, so he's a shote. Or he's a Russia. A person has no concern for the Bali Dinim. He's callous. He doesn't care. So whatever comes to his mind, that's what he's going to paskin. He's not concerned. Why do you say all three? So the answer is that here you have the here's what Chazal really anticipate a modern psychological concept, and that is multi-determination. There's a phenomenon of multi-determination. In other words, in man, a person isn't a yifote usually because of one weakness. But you need several weaknesses simultaneously in order for him to be a yifote. So what Chazal says is that in the case of a person that's gas libo bohara, it's really multi-determined. Because it's not entirely a shote, nor is he entirely a rasha. Nor is he entirely a gasruach. Gasruach means that a person suffers from egomania, but the egomania is not—it's not psychotic egomania. In other words, he knows he may have egoistic motives, but a person who has egoistic motives and keeps them in check is not a gasruach. That means he has tendencies of a gasruach. Tendencies are not in yadus are not considered chatoyim. In Yadus, the only time that you have faith is where the person translates his tendencies into action. But as long as the tendencies in check, he is not considered a rasha, or is he considered culpable in any way? Now he's not chayah for anything, because as long as he realizes what his emotions are, so and he acts according to chokhmah. So then he's not considered a rasha at all. As a matter of fact, that's the whole approach of Chazal. The approach of Chazal is a person should be honest with his emotions and with his tendencies, and should know them and be able to handle them and deal with them properly. But there is no chait in the underlying emotional desires of man. Desires of man are yetzalei vodam raminura. That's the way a person is by nature. He has all these all these crazy kind of desires and tendencies. There's actually a chote for that. It's only a chote when he allows them to be translated into action. So Chazal say that a person at the gas libo bahara has three defects. Multi-determined. The concept of multi-determination, which means on each point he's involved in translating into reality a bad trait. And the three traits over here is shota, he's out of reality, he's a rasha, he's evil, he's not concerned about other people, and he's a gasruach, he allows his haughtiness to be translated into action. That's the concept of shota, rasha, or gasruach. It means multi-determination. Okay. We're still left with one question. Why should a person throw it onto somebody else? I mean, this is a dangerous thing. Okay, let's go a little bit further. Now, it says, Hua Yoma Alti Dan Yechidi. Alti Dan Yechidi means you shouldn't judge alone. So Rabbeinu Yonah says, Gamze Me'inyan Chosef Atzma Menadim. Ki Afa Pisha Mumcha Don Vafilu Yechidi. Even though a Mumcha, they're the same as the Rambam. They all learn the same Shari. Even though a mumcha could be done alone, a person is a mumcha l'rabin, is a great scholar, so he could be done alone. But he says, midas chasidus yishalo yatzakan. He shouldn't do that. Hachiyika chaverim shiyadunu imo v'yisayu. V'nimtzachosech atzma min adin ktas Sheina kol olav moshlo. All right. So it means to say, first of all, a person should try to avoid hara if he can altogether. If he can't, the halacha of mumcha l'rabim is really is an objective phenomenon in the halachic realm. That a mumcha l'rabim can be done. There's no question about it. But we said that dayanus itself is the lesser of two evils. That's the way Chazal look at judging another person. The lesser of two evils. Why? Because in dayanus, a person sets himself up as a judge over others. And we explain the difference between that and between the case where a person is where a person is mochiach, reprimand somebody. Reprimanding the other person is still an individual. He's not under your control. So there's no danger of him placing himself in a different position over other human beings. But when you have control over another person, like by in din, where you exercise control and you place yourself in a power position over somebody else, that is inherently a bad institution. The only thing is that you can't do without it. So therefore the Torah had to halachically create that institution. But a person who is a Baal Secha will try to avoid that situation because it's fraught with danger. Now, what does he say? He says like this. He says, Shein dan yechid alecha. The only one that can judge alone is God. Ratzalama, Shein dan yechid alecha kadosh baruch hu. Only God. The yesh mefaresh Ain't on Yechidi Elo Echad Zehu Amumcha. Avalo Shor Bnei Adam. The only one that can be done Yechidi is a mumcha. That's how some say Ain't on Yechidi Lecha means that the institution of judgment is relegated completely to God. Man can't be a judge. He's not in a position. He's fallible. His emotions don't permit him to do it. Placing himself in a position over others is that itself lends him to a bad psychological state where he's capable of error. And capable of harming himself ethically. So the only one that can do it is God, because God doesn't have those defects. So he's the only one that can judge. He's omniscient, and he doesn't have the defects of man. So therefore, he's the only one that can judge. That's one shot. But he says there's another shot. Ein don yechid alechad means the only one that can be done alone is a mumcha. Doesn't mean God. It means a mumcha. So if it means a mumcha. So the question is, so then a mumcha should be able to do it. If that's what it means, ein don yechid alechad means the mumcha, so the expert should be able to do it. So it says, no. He says, it's true, a mumcha could do it, but not anybody else. He says, ulaficha, since that's the case, ein la'odom la'hachzik atzma b'mumcha. The person has no right to assume that he's an expert. Yeah. But the question is, I mean, Mamanisha, if he really is an expert, so he should assume that he's an expert. Yeah, he's not only that, then he'll be a shote, he's out of reality. Okay? Because in reality, he's a mumcha, and he's saying he's not a mumcha. And if he's not a mumcha, so there's no reason to tell him that he shouldn't be done yechidi. Of course, a person doesn't have the knowledge to be a judge, so he certainly shouldn't be a judge. I mean, it's not a matter of Kirkielos. It's a matter of halacha. He's not allowed to be done. So what is the statement? What kind of a statement is this? Ein lo lahafik lefikach, ein lo odom lahafik atzma b'mocha. A person has no right to assume and to take on the position that he is in mumcha. I mean, who is this talking to? Is it talking to the person that's not a mumcha? Of course not. If the Chazal were talking to everybody, that means even a mumcha, so why not? Why shouldn't he assume he's a mumcha if indeed he has the expertise and he has the knowledge? What's wrong with it? He said. The question, it's like the old question. Moshe Rabbeinu know exactly who he was. In terms of Rish Moshe, Anov, Mikolo, Meshach, Ne'adam. Yeah, but did he know that he was the greatest Anov? If he didn't, then he's lacking knowledge. And if he did, how could he be Anov? Yeah, but that's but the point is that the that we explained that it doesn't mean that he didn't know who he was. He knew who he was, but the idea it was he wasn't machzik tovel atzma, which means to say that he didn't enjoy the fact that he's superior to others. That wasn't the area of his emotional satisfaction. On the contrary, his knowledge of man and his knowledge of God, always placed him mentally in a world where the greatness of God was the essence of his life. And there was nothing, there was no room for anything else. That's the, that was the nature of his, of his mind. That was the world of his mind. So if that's the case, what's wrong if he's a mumcha? In fact, he's a mumcha, so why can't he be done? Why can't he be done? Yes. It may be true that a person is a, you see, it may be true that a person is a mumcha. And objectively, halachically, he has the right to be done. But human nature is such that the moment a person sees any bit of reality that can cater to his egoistic trend, he is in danger of following the egoistic emotion. Greatest danger in man is an egoist. That is the greatest danger. That's what Chazal perceives, the area that's the greatest danger in man. So, what Chazal is saying is that a person, the moment a person, even if a person is a mumcha, is an expert, and it, realistically he is the expert, but the act, when he acts in accordance with that knowledge and sets himself up, he acts out that reality, his ego is in danger, is in great danger of losing its contact with reality. Which means to say that in the, that's why Chazal saying ma'od ma'od hevish farur. Why? Because if a person isn't aware of the danger, the moment the ego gets some type of satisfaction, immediately it grabs onto everything. Okay? It's like the Rambam has in his with regard to the machla hanushas. The moment the person is an expert in one area, immediately his ego assumes that he's an expert in every area. That's the nature of man. That is a great danger. So therefore, what Chazal is saying is like this. Chazal is saying that a person shouldn't be machzik atzmo, even though in reality he is an expert. But to act in accordance with that bit of knowledge and to set himself up as a person who is a dan yechidi means that that decision, that action is necessarily going to lead to a dangerous psychological state. That's what the Rabbeinu says. That's what Chazal says. A person should not be machzik atzmo b'mumcha. Even though the fact is right, he could know he's an expert. We don't deny him the knowledge that he is an expert, that he should know what his knowledge is in comparison to other people. He has to know. Because if he doesn't know, let's say, for instance, there's a situation where there are no others. He has to be dan yechid. He has no choice. But wherever he can avoid the situation, he shouldn't cater to that emotion. So therefore, he should set up other people to be dan with him so that the emotion is not satisfied. That's what Chazal is saying. What it means is that when he judges, he should have others with him. He should take two other people, and it should be done. In other words, it should be a bezin of shlosha. There's a bezin of shlosha, a bezin of three, and there's a bezin of one. So he should never try to be a bezin of one. The state of being a bezin of one causes an emotional situation, a state of mind which is fraught with danger. So the reality of being dan yechidi is a dangerous emotional situation. So a person should avoid it, even though in reality it's true that he may be the mumcha. Okay? That's why it's advice to everybody that a person should be aware of his egoism consciously, even if he doesn't sense it. He should be aware that there's a part of his nature that's liable to get out of hand. If he exists in a certain situation, if he creates a certain situation for himself, he acts in a certain way, then the egoism can go crazy. He has to be aware that that's possible, even though he doesn't sense it at all. He has to be aware of it. That's what the memory is saying. Okay. So yadus does not take away knowledge from a person. Knowledge, insofar as he himself is concerned, in knowing his abilities and having a rational estimation of his abilities. But he still can't act accordingly. He shouldn't act according to that knowledge, because the action is liable to endanger him. That's the nature of state. With regard to psak in general, with regard to leadership in general, the Gemara has it. The Gemara says like this: Hillel Azokin Omer. Tanya, Hillel Azokin Omer. B'shas HaMachnisim Pazer. B'shas HaMafazrim Kanes. Okay? Vim Reisa Dorsha Torah Chaziv Olav Pazer. שיש שנאמר, יש מפזר ונוסף עוד. ומריס דור שאין את הרחבים עליו, כאן איס. שנאמר איס לסל השם הפר את הרצח. So Rashi says, בשעס המכניסים שאין חכמי אדום הרביצים תור לתלמידים, ובחכמי אדום הנת דין מרבית תור לתלמידים, פזר, עטו לשענות לתלמידים. So you should teach the תלמידים. בשעס המפזרים, where you have שהגדולים שבדור מרביצים תור, that the גדולים are teaching תור to everybody, כאן איס. Ato, he says, you kanes means to withdraw. You should withdraw. V'lo tito swar aleha. Okay. Da'af zu l'kavet shemayim neg. Lechos b'midas hanova. V'ksiv eis l'asav Hashem afer et arzecha. So if in other words you see that there is no need for you to be a marbit Torah, so don't. You should withdraw. Live a private life. But if you're in a situation where you see that it's necessary, then pazer. Okay? But it means that a person should not have a desire to be a Mabit Torah. If he has that desire, then there's something wrong. In Hilchos Talmud Torah, Perikei Allah Adam. L'chol Talmud shelo higia lo ro o more, any Talmud that is not ready, to be a Baal HaRo, and he sets himself up as a Baal HaRo, Hareze Rasha Shota Vegasaroch. Exact same thing. Exact same chazal. Rasha Shota Vegasaroch. Volav Nema, ki rabim chalol nipila. V'chein chacham she'egia lo'hora ve'eno mora. And there's also a person that is capable of hora. And he isn't, practice being a mora hora. Hareze moneya Torah v'nosei mechsholos v'fneo ivrim. V'olav Nema v'atsumim kol harugel. Okay. Elo Talmidim Akanim Shlo Hirbu Torah Koroi Vehem Vakshim Lizgadl Befnei Amei Horetz Ubein Anshe Iram. These are the people that want to be great in the eyes of the masses and among the people of their city. Vekoftzin Vyoshvin Verosh Ledin Ulahoros Beisrael. Hem Hamarbim Hamachlokos Vehem Hamachriv Mesa Olam Vamachabin Nera Shal Torah Vamachablin Kerem Hashem Tzvakos Aleim Amar Shlomo Bechachmoso Echazulonu Shu'olim Shu'olim Kitana Machablin Kramim. You see? You see, the same emotions exist with them. Prior to this, there is no emotional attitude that a person can assume that will protect it. Sometimes a person can assume a certain emotional attitude and avoid doing something horrible, catastrophic. Over here, it's impossible. Because if he's overcome with Baishanis, if he's a very humble person by nature, emotionally humble, so then there's a big danger that he's going to prevent people from gaining knowledge. And if, on the contrary, his egoistic trends he allows to come to the fore and to be expressed, so then he destroys, he's a destroyer of Kol Yisrael. And it's interesting, it's Gora Machlokas. Gora Machlokas because those kind of emotions always lead to disruption because it's an egoistic thing, so therefore he doesn't know how to handle himself. His ego against somebody else's ego, the whole involvement, he creates a whole mind, creates machlokas. There's no attitude, emotional attitude you can assume. The person just has to use his, he has to be totally under the sway of his intellect. If he's not under the sway of his intellect, then he's going to be destructive either way. Okay. V'al tomar, you shouldn't say kablu daiti. Shehein rashoin v'lo ata. Now, what does it mean, v'al tomar kablu daiti? So you shouldn't set yourself up as an independent dayan. And then it says that you shouldn't say, you shouldn't want people to accept your das. Alright, it's like this. Ramad, Ramad, Min Rabbeinu Prakzen. Ramad, it's like this. Ramad, Kashiachku Alecha Chavarecha B'das Min Adeos Lo Sachrichem L'Kabal Sfarah Secha. You shouldn't force them to accept your Sfarah. M'nei Sheheim Makirim M'yesh Lehem L'Kabal. They can recognize whether they should accept your Sfarah. V'eino B'shuscha Lachrichem L'Kabal Zaitcha. Not in your shush to force them to accept your das. So the question is, why not? Here we're speaking about a person who is not setting himself up as a soul dayan. He's taking two other people with him. But still in all, he shouldn't try to exert influence over his fellow dayanim and coerce them, psychologically coerce them. There's no other way. You can't coerce them physically. It means there's such a thing as a psychological coercion, being influential. convincing. He shouldn't try to use influence to convince them that he's right. I mean, here again, you have the question. The question is that if he's right, why shouldn't he? And if he's wrong, he certainly shouldn't. Yeah. So what's the chat? What is the chat in the Rambam? What's the chat in the Rambam? No, I mean, here, it's a practical thing. Let's say if I'm sitting in a case and I see my fellow Dayanim are making a mistake, I see that I'm right, so certainly I should try to force them to accept my doctrine. Why not? And if they're not making a mistake, it'll be ridiculous. So what does he mean? It's a little bit different than Rambam here. It's not exactly the same. It's similar, but it's not exactly the same. Then you have to take up that path. That it's the same thing as before. It's an extension of it. But the Rambam seems to be taking another path. You shouldn't coerce them to accept your das. What does he mean? What does the Rambam mean? A person's conviction stems from two sources. One source of his conviction is the ideas, the ideational source. So the ideas exert a certain influence over a person and convince him that he's right. He's influenced by the ideas. But there's another source that convinces a person that he's right, and that is himself. You see? Himself. That's a very convincing source. Simply because it's his idea. People don't usually recognize that, but what people usually do is like this. The conviction stems from the fact that it's their idea. But they interpret it in terms of the idea. They fool themselves into thinking that the reason why they're so convinced is because of the greatness of the idea. Okay. So what the Rambam is saying is like this. The Rambam is saying, that's what the Rambam means. The Rambam means that is a dangerous area. A person should be very careful to weed out the source of his conviction, to see whether the conviction stems from really the ideas, or whether the conviction stems from the fact that it's part of him. It's his idea. His idea is very convincing, because he feels that he's right. Certain feeling that people have with regard to themselves, that their way of thinking is because it's their way. They may not even be aware of it. Mainly in politics you see things like that. Why? Because it expresses itself in areas where a person can't prove anything. See, where there's a given proof, what? Yeah. He feels he's right. He feels he's right. So what? That's why they say, that's why people say that you can't, in two areas, you really can't. In two areas, people say that, I'm all, you know, like the Gemara sometimes quotes Mili Dalma. Gemara says, you know, that, Haina Damri Inchi. People say this way. They think of certain things people are attuned to. You have to recognize certain things that intuitively people recognize. Like people say, two areas you can't discuss, politics and religion. Why? Because those are the areas where people do not have discussions in terms of proof. And you see the conviction is very great. As a matter of fact, conviction in the area, for instance, of politics is usually greater than conviction in areas that we have definite knowledge about. It's a funny thing. But if you'll ask people about medicine, they're not going to have so much conviction. You know, even a physician might not be that sure. But when it comes to to an area like politics or an area of religion for the Hamon, I'm not talking about Yad, I'm talking about, you know, religion for Hamon, the conviction is so great. I mean, it's unbelievable. And it's precisely an area in which there can't be any knowledge. Why? That's precisely why the conviction is so great. Because there can't be any knowledge. So therefore, there's room for the person to sense the conviction totally based upon the fact that it's his feeling. It's his emotion. That's what Chazal said. That a person, if there's a proof, of course the Dayan has to present the proof. If he has a proof that he's right, he has to present the proof, no question about it. But it means the Rambam is very careful to say his Svara. His Svara. Svara means where there is no proof, and it seems to him the Dayan has a right in Halacha. That's why you always have Machlekes. You have Machlekes Tanaim and Amoraim. They couldn't prove one position over the other, but a person has a right to follow his intellectual... is intellectual intuition. There's such a thing as intellectual intuition. You have a right to follow in halacha your intellectual intuition. That's how Dayan works. He follows his intuition. Look at our Moshe Sfarim. You'll see he says a lot of things that there's no proof of it. He's a mistava like that. He has a right to follow his intuition. But a person has to have a very healthy attitude towards his intellectual intuition. And that is that could be it's right, but he shouldn't be so secure. That security, that sense of security, shouldn't follow. He has a right to judge according to make a decision according to that. But when he coerces others and tries to convince them that he's right, that type of emotion is based upon the fact that he feels that his intuition is the right one. That and that and halacha is that. Well, that's what Chazal say. You are not permitted to indulge in. You're not permitted to indulge in that emotion. A person is not, and in general, a person shouldn't indulge in that emotion. A person should recognize that in the area of human intuition, he is not so. Not his chances of being right are not as great. The chances of his being right are not as great as he feels they are. You see. That's what the that's what Chazal is saying. So therefore, what is the proper approach? Simply to present his view, and let the view talk for itself. But he shouldn't try to use any emotional conviction, any powers of conviction, to influence the other dayanim to go along with his intuition. That's what the Mishnah says. It says a little different. The answer is like this. It's almost funny. It's like this. It says Val Tomar Kablu Daiti. He says, "Gam kishetika chabura lo dunes adin." Even when you take a chabura along to judge the din. Interesting that Bertrand Russell says, by the way. Bertrand Russell says has that awareness. He mentions somewhere. He says one of the perfections of a philosopher is that he should not be so sure of his philosophical conviction. He mentions that he was aware of this pitfall. Okay. Gam kishetika chabura lodin es adin v'nechleku olecha al tomar ani mumcha v'heim eina mumcha. He says, even when you take two other people to join with you in paskin the din, you shouldn't say, I'm the expert, and they are mumcha. Even though factually it's true, they are mumcha. He says, es daiti yekablu, they should accept my das, v'yevatlu daitam etzli. And their opinion should become subordinated to mine. He says, why? Why will a person say that? The person says, he gives the rationale. He says, ki im lo mitnei an v'sonusi, if it wasn't for my great humility, ani levadi ha'isi donas adin. I would have judged the case myself. So you see, the fact that I've taken these two other dayanim to join me shows clearly that I am an honor. So now that we've established that fact, Gamata Esvarasi Tasa. Now you can do my svara. He says, Shein lo chalash over that. Shouldn't think that way. I mean, this sounds absurd. Sounds like a game, you know? I mean, first he takes these two other dayan to join him. Why? Because he, supposedly, because he doesn't want to be a Balgaiva, right? He doesn't want to assume that he's a big expert, right? But now that he's done that, so he says, well, this proves conclusively that I am really a great honor, and now enough to be concerned about that. No, still, you shouldn't do that. What's the Chatter of Indiana? I mean, it can't be talking about absurdity. But the answer is precisely because it sounds ridiculous. It makes sense. Arbenion is saying this. Arbenion is saying an interesting thing. He's saying that the ego is the one thing that you cannot put down. You see? Because it has a way of coming back to life, popping back again. Precisely because you put it down. Exactly. Precisely because you put it down. You see? Another way it is. It's an impossibility, Arbenion says, to put down the human ego. Because the moment the person takes measures to put down his ego, that itself is part of the ego, joins the ego. So now you see, I'm a person that is aware. That other Balgaiva isn't aware what a Balgaiva is. I know what a Balgaiva I am, and I've taken measures to assure myself against it, and that's why I am the owner, and he's the Balgaiva. You see? That's the way. That's the way it works. That's the biggest guy ever. Forcey Moses, the biggest guy ever. So what is Arbenion say? It's very nice, but then it means that human nature, human being, is hopeless. He can't do anything about it. Because what coerces a person to do something is his ego. That's really the coercive force. So to tell a person, you say, look, you're wasting your time in thinking that what you're accomplishing is an accomplishment. It's nonsense. And you could even show him that chokhmah is the only thing that really is deserving of praise. And practically every human being will agree with that. Because you see that people that achieve fame, the first thing they want to do is take on the role of chachamim. That's the first thing they want to do. That's what they ultimately they want to do. They want to be chachamim. So even a person who has great wealth and is very famous and renowned, I mean, the main thing is when they interview the person, he wants to show you his chachma. It's an amazing thing. Usually they try to show you their chachma with regard to how they work. You know? An area which they know nothing about. But immediately this is the assumption that he's a famous person, he's well known, and he knows how to live, and he gives you his life, I think this, I think that, and this is why, he, right down to philosophy and metaphysics, all clear to him. So you see that a human being can even be led to the realization that chokhmah is the greatest thing, because his ego knows, underneath he knows, that is really the greatest thing. So the ego can coerce a person to spend his time even in chokhmah. But there's only one thing it can't do. It can't coerce him to remove himself from ego. Because that's an impossibility. It's circular. Exactly. As a matter of fact, Rabbi Saul Salanta, they say that towards the end of his life, that he said that's the one thing that the person somehow or other can't get rid of. They felt that's the one. The whole sheet of Samosa to work on every single thing. So, but that always pops up. It's like a demon that you cut off one head and two heads come back. And then it's impossible. It's impossible to get rid of it. Because why is it impossible to get rid of it? Because what are you using to get rid of it? You're using your ego. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah said. That's what Rabbeinu Yonah said. It's a total impossibility. What is the solution? We're caught. We're all caught up in this, and that's it. Might as well forget about it. You can't get out of it. You see? Yeah. Ronnie. But the answer is there must be an appeal to reality. In other words, I guess, the measure, what Rabbeinu Yonah is saying is like this. Alti dan yechidi, the first step is you shouldn't be judged by yourself. Why? Because if you're judging by yourself, you're placing yourself in a situation where your ego is in danger. You'll become an egomaniac. Yeah. Inflate your ego. Okay, so that's why you should avoid that situation. But, he says, the avoidance of the situation itself can create a problem, because now you have the egoistic satisfaction that you've avoided the situation. You see? So he says you have to recognize that itself is the greatest danger. What is the only recourse? The only recourse, unfortunately, is reality. That's the only recourse, reality. In other words, it must be, like we said last time, we spoke about that this Chazal is a critique of the greatest Chachamim. And Chazal didn't spare anybody. The greatest Chachamim can fall prey. He showed the rush of a Gas Ruach. Talmud Chacham, a football, a Gadol the Torah. As I told you, so Slanta built this whole Shitzel Mosa on that one thing. First, he Gadol the Torah and still be a Moshkas in the Nidus. And it's true. But the question is, what is the antidote? That's the question. Everybody agrees that the defect is possible. But the question is, what is the antidote? The answer is, there is only if the person is not captured, if he isn't influenced by reality, by chokhmah, there's no way emotionally you can protect yourself. There's no such thing as ethical perfection per se. Cannot be. Because what happens is, the moment you come up against the ego, there's no way to get out of it. There's absolutely no way. Because why does a person want to perfect himself ethically? That's an egoistic thing too. Because he has a certain satisfaction. What's the main driver? I can't be a Russia. I can't view myself as being a Russia. How could I be so unkind to this person who needs my help? So therefore, he wants to have he's motivated by an opinion with regard to himself, and that it's all that's the self again. So how is it? Once he does that, now he's in great danger. That's why the Rav somebody one time told me about that the Rav one time was speaking about the Bali Musa. I didn't hear the Rav say it himself, but somebody quoted him as saying that the Rav said the Bali Musa were the biggest Bali Gaiva. That's what it was. All machlokes, the Briscoe were against the whole Shitsa Musa. But that was his critique of the Bali Musa. He didn't say everyone, because they mentioned one Bali Musa. He said, no, he was a sincere person. But in general, the movement led to tremendous Gaiva, because people used to say that, Ich bin a Bali Musa. I am a Bali Musa. And I remember hearing one time, as a matter of fact, one of the people was a noted Bal Musa, that he had an argument with a person that wasn't a Bal Musa. The person that wasn't a Bal Musa criticized him. So, see, Musa was a very sophisticated, analytical kind of thing. It's a very interesting thing. Usually, you read Musa Musa. See, it happens to be an interesting, it was an intellectual institution. But the Bal Musas, they would analyze. They're very analytical with regard to Midas, where people before weren't that analytical. Weren't. You see? So in that respect, they did make headway. But the Bal Musar criticized, the Bal Musar's retort was, let me show you what you did that you're not a Bal Musar, and what I did being a Bal Musar. And he proceeded to show him how he, the one that wasn't a Bal Musar, was wrong, you know. And he showed him, but me, I am the Bal Musar. I was right. So you see. But then you get caught up. In the meantime, he's getting caught up in the whole this whole dilemma of Ich bin am the Bal Musar, and you're not the Bal Musar. So really, perfection is impossible from an ethical standpoint. Just with ethics alone, it's impossible. Can't have perfection of ethics, because you're going to get caught up in this circle, in this vicious circle. And you're going to be destroyed, because eventually you're going to... The whole motivation is the ego, then you remain with the big ego, tremendous ego, which is the worst defect of all. So the answer is, there's only one answer. There has to be a recourse to rationality. That's why Yadus insists on Chochmah, not just Chochmah, but a person learning and seeing, understanding, experiencing knowledge. Experiencing knowledge. Just knowing that there is knowledge doesn't mean anything. A person has to experience knowledge. That's why without the learning experience, there's no perfection. Impossible. The only thing that humbles a person is the learning experience. When he sees the scope and the breadth and the depth of knowledge, that is the real, that is the humbler. That is the only thing that humbles a person. There is no other force that can do it. So that's really Rabbeinu. Rabbeinu Yonah is saying, do not think that that there is an ethical tool that you could use that could that is going to safeguard you from falling into the trap of the Baal Gaiva. There is no such thing. The only thing that says Al Tomaza, Al Tachshaza. Al Tachshaza means the only way out of it is a recourse to reality. And if a person perceives reality, the reality of the reality of the weakness of his mind and the weakness of his opinion and how he should question as to whether his opinion is valid or not. You see, the person doesn't have that scope, that reality. If he doesn't know what the world of knowledge is, if he doesn't know the scope of the world of knowledge, he can't possibly be humble. It's impossible. That's just like, for that reason you find that the greatest Chachamim were really the humblest people, because they recognize the world of knowledge. It's like Newton said, he feels like a child playing by the sand, and the whole ocean of truth rolls on before him. You could say that because he knows what knowledge is. The person knows what knowledge is, so he knows how little he knows. The person knows no knowledge is, he has the opinion that he knows everything. So that's why people, you do find it among people who have knowledge also, though. I want to mention before, it's only people who have factual knowledge, not the real theoreticians. The real theoreticians know how weak the human mind is in perceiving reality. The ones who have factual knowledge, on the contrary, are tremendous balagaiva, because they think we can do this, we can do that. They don't understand what they're doing. They think that they're doing things and that we really understand what we're doing. Yeah, well, yes, certain groping and physically we've accomplished a lot technologically, but the intellectual, the theoretical gap is unbelievable. When you get into the world theoretical, how little we know is unbelievable. So the only one that could, the only avoidance of the ego is through chachma, through knowledge. That's our Bein Yonah. That's basically our Bein Yonah saying. There is no measure that you could take that you could take that measure, and it will prevent you from being in an emotional situation. But if that is the only measure you're taking, then you're going to wind up in the next trap. Next trap, and you should take the measure because you don't want to. A person doesn't want to place himself in a situation where he's going to where he's going to be catering to his ego. He's going to be in danger. But that alone is not enough because then the next step is, and therefore he thinks that his opinion is so important. You see, that's the thing. Okay. Now the question, the original question we started out with. Yes. I want you to understand something. Rabbeinu Yonah is not negating the first way. He's not negating. The first way is very important. That a person should be aware of the dangers of enticing his ego, that's very important. That's an important thing. That a person should always do that. Certainly, should always act that way. But he has to realize that that is only going to be good. It's only going to have a real effect if it's combined with chachma. Without chachma, it's not going to do anything. It'll just avoid a certain situation, then it'll creep up somewhere else. You see? But certainly a person should try to avoid. Now, he's not taking back what I said before, that a person should be aware of the dangers of his ego and try to avoid certain situations which lend themselves inherently towards inflaming and inflating his ego. You see? It's true. That in a teaching situation is that's exactly this case where the person's a great mefupul. That's the story I told this week of the Rosh Hashanah. Vigilance insofar as his ego is concerned. Mind, but I have no choice. But the amount of conviction is not always proportionate to the idea. It's proportionate to my own ego. So therefore, a person has to be aware of a healthy attitude with regard to their own conviction. That's what Yad is demanding. But you have to act. Saying brachas, going in the brachas, that a person, what is really the statement? That a person should not feel that his life is worthless because it was spent with a few people on this world. Let's say a person spent a life with just a few friends, and he learned, and he was also in Torah and mitzvahs, and no one knew about him, and he just went through this life, 70 years he lived, and he just was involved in thought, and nobody ever heard about him. That life is a great life. Nothing to do with what anybody knew about him or never known, nothing. That's the way, that's a person's attitude. That's what a person's attitude should be. That is, as a matter of fact, that is the greatest life. But sometimes a person has to remove himself from that private life, can't have the luxury of a private life, and he has to be a marbet story. It depends on the situation. He has to work within the situation. It's not all or nothing either. It's not all or nothing either. It means that a person who is a marbet story, he has to decide on which level he's going to be a marbet story. What exactly is appropriate to him? I mean, should he try to be a marbet torah in front of 10,000 people, in front of 5 people, in front of 100? He has to make that decision. The decision should be based on rationality. That's what the decision is based on. It shouldn't be based on anything else. The question is, so why should I jeopardize my friend? Why should I jeopardize my chaver if I myself want to be protected? I want to safeguard myself, so I don't want to be done. But what about my chaver? What about safeguarding him? That was the original question we asked. Okay, what's the answer? In other words, the Mishnah says that you're not supposed to be, you should try to avoid chosech, you should be a chosech atzmo min adin. Chosech atzmo min adin. But the question is, yes, are you placing somebody else in jeopardy? What's the answer? Apparently, when it comes to the area of endangering your soul, when it comes to the area of placing your soul in danger, you are not mechuyah to evaluate the other person. See? You are not permitted to say, I'll jump into that danger and I'll save you. That is wrong question. A person, if he knows that there is a danger for himself personally, the only time he's permitted to jump into that situation is when there's no alternative. Otherwise, he has to avoid it. Otherwise, he should avoid it, because he knows that it's harmful to himself. And it would be wrong for him to say, this is ethically a dangerous situation. I will go and do it, and I'll save you the trouble. Because you cannot, a person has no right to be done. Then he'd have to have God's knowledge. Because he knows himself, and he knows the danger. The other person is not as, that's not his concern. I mean, he doesn't know. How does he know the other person might be able to handle it better than he can? He doesn't know. He has no right to make a decision like that. That's a loch of Chayecha Kodman, and it's not only Chayecha Kodman, it's more than that. It's a matter of you have no right to make that evaluation. Your obligation in this world is only insofar as you're concerned. You don't have knowledge insofar as judging others and who is in greater jeopardy and who's in less jeopardy. That's not your realm of decision making. So therefore the halacha states clearly that you should be a choseh chasmo min adam. Every individual is mechuyav to refrain from a situation that could jeopardize himself ethically, could jeopardize himself in terms of his midos, in terms of his perfection, is mechuyav to refrain from it. The other fellow, is going to have to do it. That's not your business. If he's doing it, fine. Yezachel, like Rabbi Rosenfeld says, Yezacheskis kashus. I go to Cheskis kashus. All the Cheskis kashus. This man has a Cheskis kashus, and that's it. I am not permitted to say he doesn't have a Cheskis kashus. I'm going to save him. That's the halacha of the mission. It's an interesting thing. Physical things, you have to endanger your life, even if it's a suffix. To save somebody else's life, if it's a suffix, you might lose your life, and you have to endanger yourself. But not with regard to ethical areas. In ethical areas, no such law. You don't say, I'll jump in and take the danger and let the other person off. I should know the other person. Let's say I know the other person has very strong egoistic tendencies. So if he gets into this position, he's going to fall prey to this defect. I am not permitted to do it because I have no right to judge how he's going to handle himself in that situation over here. Seems to be difficult because that's a personal thing. I don't want to have people hate me. Nobody wants to be hated by people. So why should I say let him be hated and not me? I mean, Gezel, Shua, Shav, and Gas, Libo, that I understand because those are imperfections. I don't want to get involved in Sveikis, Gezel.
There is, as we mentioned, that Chazal gave a critique of the Talmud Chacham. Even the great scholar is not immune, has no immunity from this defect. The defect being that his chachma, the chachma that he has, is always translated into the support from the Haman. And he never can break away. He can't break away from that phenomenon. So therefore, it has no value for himself. It has no real value. And that leads to Shota Rosh HaGasarach. That leads to Shota Rosh HaGasarach. There's another Chazal, Lynchian Chazal, also that fits into this statement. Gemara says, Orech Yomim B'Yamina B'Smola Osha V'Chavod. And on the Orech Yom, is for Torah gives the person Orech Yomim on the right side and on the left side wealth and honor. So the Gemara says it's interesting Chazal. It's a pasuk. I mean, the Chazal is very interesting. The pasuk says Orech Yomim b'yamina is smola osher v'chavod. So Chazal say al tikru b'smola ela lamas me'ilamba. What is the what kind of phenomenon is that? The Mas Milimba? Mas Milimba means the ones that go to the left. They use it so that somehow there's an imperfection in their Torah. So the Pasuk says an interesting thing. The Pasuk says the Amina, the one that really perceives Torah for its true inherent value, so he has Orech Yom. Orech Yom means long life, meaning that he partakes of the good, the essential good, in reality. But the smola, that means lamas me'ilimba, the ones that go to the left in Torah, it means that they aren't really perfected. In other words, they don't really perceive the beauty of Torah for its own sake, but only in terms of how it can be translated to the masses, and their role and their function in doing this. So for such people, the Torah, the pasuk says, "B'smola osher v'chavod." An amazing thing. It means that Torah gives them wealth and gives them honor, because even though they use it for their own good, you see, for their own good, because they're attached to the effect that their knowledge has among the masses, you see. But they get osher v'chavod. Even the Torah even gives them osher v'chavod. The nature of Torah is such that even the Mas Me'ilimba,
Even the ones that utilize it, basically they're not really lishma. They're not on the level of lishma, but they receive osher v'chavad, honor and wealth, because the Hamon Am recognizes them and places them on a tremendous pedestal. What? But doesn't necessarily mean that he showed the Rosh Hashanah necessarily. It doesn't mean he showed the Rosh Hashanah. It means that he couldn't make that break. Masmi Leboim could mean he could not make the break, the transition from coming in contact with the Chochmah. He couldn't make that break to become imbued with the beauty of Chochmah and not to be concerned about how the masses perceive it. But the personality of the individual always remains tied to the people's perception of himself. Doesn't have to be a shot to Rosh Hashanah, but that's the furthest extreme. But he could still be a Mas Milenbar. By the way, the personality that is most dependent, the personality that represents the greatest dependency on the mass's perception, which means the individual whose reality is totally determined by what other people think of them, is the politician. And basically, that's the definition of a politician. That's the essence of a politician. The essence of a politician is that he's. I mean, that's why you have. That's his essence. His essence is how he's perceived by others. That's the definition of a politician. That's his essence, you see. So that's why naturally, people always complain that the politicians are dishonest. Yeah, but it's an impossibility to be otherwise. Because the only reason that he's involved in this, the only purpose is because he can't exist. His existence is totally dependent upon what the masses think of him. And that's why he's involved. That's why he has to... he has to forfeit truth and honesty when you get down to, of course, if he doesn't, he won't do it if he doesn't have to, because that itself is degrading. But when it comes down to it, he's going to have to, if he's going to gain the masses and he has to be dishonest, he's definitely going to have to do that, because that's his essential motivation. Okay. Rabbi Yonas and Omer. Call him the Kayim at the Torah me only. So full of Kayim on the earth. Okay, a person who fulfills the Torah out of poverty, so the end result will be that this person will fulfill the Torah out of wealth. All right? So Rambam says, Amar, ki osek b'Torah v'oni v'dal, a person who is involved in Torah and he's poor, The im kol zeh yitzayin nafsho lasok bo, and in spite of that, he torments himself. He goes through the pain of being involved in Torah. Besof yasok bo meyashim. The end will be that he will be involved in Torah from wealth. Umeyasher lo yiyelo mashi yatriduhu minakriya. And in other words, he adds, the Rambam adds, because what does it mean by wealth? It means he'll be in a situation that nothing will detract him. Nothing will distract him. Will distract him from being involved in study. Umi shelo yasok b'Torah mipnei rov hamamon. A person who does not involve himself in Torah because he has much wealth. L'isasko b'maychal b'mishto b'mnucho. Because he's involved in eating and drinking and relaxing. The end result will be that he will be in a situation where he doesn't have any time. He's in a situation where he's constantly preoccupied with trying to make ends meet. He doesn't have any time. Achi Sibas Bitulo Bikriya, so that the cause, the reason why he doesn't learn is to doso belechem lemachalo, his involvement for food, for bread, in order to sustain himself. In other words, in order to he has to spend his time in order to just make a living. That's what the that's how the Rambam explains the mission. So according to the Rambam, it's a what does it mean? According to the Rambam, it's talking about hashgacha. Yeah. Now somebody, answer a common question that people ask: how come you see a person? Well, you see individuals that are also in the Torah, and they're on the Yemen. Yeah, and we don't see later they become wealthy. We didn't see the certain Chazal were Aniyim. But there's two answers. First of all, over here by Asher, it means not Ashiris, not relative Ashiris. Doesn't mean he's relatively wealthy, a wealthy person, that his individual is renowned for his wealth. What it means is that he simply is in a situation, wealth means he's in a situation where he doesn't need. He's not in a state of need. Okay, so he might not be known to be a wealthy person, but he's all his needs are satisfied. That's basically the definition of wealth. And the second answer is that in all these Chazal, what Chazal are saying is that there is such a thing in the insofar as the Ashgacha is concerned. In other words, there are certain principles of the Ashgacha. There are certain lines that the Ashgacha takes. If you find an exception, it doesn't necessarily mean that the rule is not true. The rule is not true. In other words, just like, for instance, there's a rule that a person who invests intelligently will reap benefits. A person who's an intelligent investor, a person who's a foolish investor will lose money. Yet you find that a person can buy a sweepstakes ticket, which is a foolish investment, and become rewarded. You see, that's not a break in the law. It's an exception. It simply doesn't always work. It's simply a general principle. The same thing is true with the Ashgach. There are general principles of the Ashgach. It doesn't necessarily mean every single instance has to be that way. It means there's a general principle. So as a general principle, we have to live according to the general principles. As a general principle of the Ashgacha, the Rambam says there is such a thing. Ashgacha, remember, is not an ace. Ashgacha is something which is part of nature. So Ashgacha Hashem is that a person who, when he is poverty-stricken, when he finds it difficult, if he involves himself in Torah, so the Ashgacha, he has a special Ashgacha, he's under a special Ashgacha, that he will be able to learn Torah without any distractions, without any being in a state of need. That's the statement. That's where the Rambam interprets the Rambam. Okay? Now, Rabbeinu Yonah says a little differently. He adds to it. He doesn't argue in the Rambam, but he adds to it. He says, so full of kaima me osher. He says like this. Yeah. Ki is asher v'nosaf o diel oshos meruvachos lasa putar lakaima mitzvos. Ki parnasoso tia meruba. He says, he just spoke it out a little more clearly. He says he won't have to work. He won't have to work. Because he'll eat and he'll learn with great happiness. Because with chachma he'll have everything. He says, that Shlomo HaMelech asked of God, he asked only for Chochmah. He didn't ask for Kesef and Zohar. Kimo Shenema. Have you got a Mishle? Of course, Fosgim. Shov Udvar Chozov Harchek Mimeni. Mishle Lamed Pasukas. Shov Udvar Chozov Harchek Mimeni. He says, Shov means something which is for nothing, like a shvuah shav. And varkozov means something which is false. Harchek mimeni, keep it away from me. He asks God. Reish va'osher al tikun li. Poverty and wealth do not give to me. Atrifeni lechem chuki. Give me my daily bread. That's the pasuk in Mishle. An interesting pasuk. What? It's like this. The pasuk says, it's an interesting thing. The previous pasuk is important, but the previous pasuk is an introduction to this. It says,
Shtayim sha'alti me'itach. Two things I asked from you, Shlomo Melech says to God. Al timna mimeni b'terem omos. Don't withhold it from me before I die. And this is what he asks. Shovud v'akozov harchek mimeni, reish v'osher al titan li, atrifeni lechem chuki. Okay? Yeah, it sounds like three. Pen ezba v'chichashti, explains it a little more next part. Lest ezba means become sava. I'll become satiated, full. V'chichashti, v'omarti miyad Hashem. Shechachta, yeah. I'll deny and I'll say who is God. Upen ivoresh v'ganafti, unless I become poor and I'll steal. V'sofasti shem elokoi. And it means that I'll say God's name in vain. So I'll say shvas sheker. So, yeah. So what does it mean that he asked, what are the two things? The two things that he asked of God is simply that he shouldn't be overcome by either one of the, overwhelmed by either one of the two sides. Which means like this, that there are two dangers in a person's life. One danger in a person's life is that a person is overcome by the world of fantasy. And that's the one where it's pen esba v'chichashti. It means that if he becomes wealthy, it means to say that a person becomes wealthy and becomes overcome, the desire for wealth is really a desire for increasing one's self-esteem. That's the basic underlying desire. And you see today, from all the multimillionaires, they have no need for their money, but are constantly involved in accumulating more money. What is that drive? What is that desire? The drive is one thing. To increase one's self-importance. You see? So the increase of one's self-importance, that's pen ezba v'chichashti v'amarti mir Hashem. It means that that self-importance cannot coexist with the recognition of God. That's one danger. Danger is a person is overcome by living in the world of his fantasies. Then he says, upeni v'oresh v'ganafti. But there's another danger. Another danger is that a person finds himself in a state of need. In a state of a tremendous need. A person does not realize what he could do if he should find himself in a state of total poverty, abject poverty. A person doesn't realize what he could do. He doesn't even know himself what he could do. But that state is a terribly dangerous state. Because it's a state where a person becomes desperate. When a person becomes desperate, he can lose his whole mental equilibrium. That's why the Gemara says that anius ma'veresis odom me'al dato me'al daskono. Poverty takes a person away from his own mind, his own mental state, and from the state that God knows to be the best state for man. A daskono. Takes him away from God. Daskono. So that's what it means, Shtayim Shalta. It means he asked two things of God. Two things that he asked of God was, one, that he shouldn't be overcome. That's what he means. He says, Shavad v'achozav harchek mimeni. How? The two things are, Reish v'osher al titan li. What does it mean, Reish v'osher? Shlomo Melech was not a poor person. What does it mean, Reish v'osher al titan li? He means insofar as his mental state is concerned. Is don't make me an individual that feels, that senses wealth, that senses the power of his wealth, and is overcome by his own importance. And or the contrary, I don't want either. I don't want to be a person that's in abject poverty, that is in a state of need. Because he explains. In one case, one denies God. In the other case, a person is driven because of need. He's driven to violate God's law and to simply be over on his das. Be over on his das. Well, dat al das kana, to lose his mental equilibrium. Those two things he says I don't want to encounter in my life. Okay? That's the plain shot in the puzzle. That's the plain Shabbat Nefas. Yeah. So what is Rabbeinu Yonah saying? So what is Rabbeinu Yonah saying? I mean, it doesn't seem to fit in line with what Rabbeinu Yonah says. Rabbeinu Yonah says like this. He says that what did Shlomo HaMelech ask for? He says Shlomo HaMelech asked for Chachma. Because he said Hachifeni Lechem Chuki. What does it mean Hachifeni Lechem Chuki? Hachifeni Lechem Chuki doesn't mean give me my daily bread literally. What it means is that a person's relationship, a person could be a very wealthy person and he could still be Hachifeni Lechem Chuki. You see? What it means is that he shouldn't be overcome by the emotion of the ocean. It means if he views his wealth in a way that it's simply something that's necessary for his daily living. That's how Shefein Lechem Chuki. On the contrary, you see that Rabbeinu Yonah says ki panasasa tiyeh merubo v'lo yitztarcha l'yigei kapav. We'll have tremendous panasa, he won't have to do anything, he won't have to work, he won't have to exert any effort to sustain himself, he won't have panasasa merubo. So it doesn't mean that Shefein Lechem Chuki means Shefein Lechem Chuki means daily bread means in poverty. No, it means on the contrary, he's broch ad b'lidai, he has plenty, but it means to say how it's talking about how he relates to his state, to his financial state, which means to say that he views it simply as Hatrifeni Lechem Chuki, that this is what I need, and that's it. He relates to it only as Lechem Chuki. That's the way he relates to his finances. And the whole essence of his financial state is that he has what he needs, and it means nothing more than that. You see? So what does it have to do with Chachma? Rabbeinu Yonah says that this pasuk has to do with this chazal. Kol makayim es haTorah me'oni sofo l'kayim me'osha. Alright? V'chol mevala es haTorah me'osha sofo vado me'oni. Okay. Now, what does it have to do with this statement? What does it have to do with this statement? What does that do with this statement? He says, Omar, he said like this. Imeshal kesef ezov, hinei hu noslin echosim v'garkot. So he says, Moshe l'melech. So he explains like this. He says, Shlomo HaMelech said like this. He says, Moshe to HaMelech. She'omar la'avdo she'alma etem lach. The king said to his servant, tell me whatever you want, I'll give you. Omar, he said, Imeshal kesef ezov, hinei hu noslin echosim v'garkot. Hu noslin. So he'll give me a lot of properties, a lot of wealth. Eshalas basa melech li liisha. I'll ask for the king's daughter. Vako b'chlal, everything's included. Kacham ha-shlom olav ha-shalom. Eshalas ha-chochma, vako b'chlal. Why? Ki b'tzeh la-chochma, b'tzeh la-kosef. Because a person that's a chocham knows how to earn money. How to earn money. B'tzeh la-chochma, b'tzeh la-kosef. So what is it? How is this tied to the statement, Hatrifeni Lechem Chuki? It seems from what he's quoting seems to be a totally different thing. I mean, over here he's saying that a person called a lomed as a Torah me'oni means he'll become a chacham. Once he becomes a chacham, it's different than the Rambam. Because the Rambam explains it to me purely in terms of Hashgacha. But he explains, no, he explains that it's not just in terms of Hashgacha. It's a practical thing. Because a person that learns a chachma will know how to earn money, make money, and then he doesn't have any problems. He'll have everything, you see. But what does that have to do with the pasuk, though? The pasuk doesn't seem to be in line with it. The pasuk seems to be totally different thing. It's a totally different statement. Yeah. So what's the answer? And it's an interesting this. What he means is that it doesn't make any sense. Shlomo HaMelech's question does not make any sense unless you interpret it as meaning that he's asking for chachma. That's what he says. Why? Because nobody in their right mind would say he would make such a request. What do you mean? Reish v'o shal titan le. Don't make me a wealthy person, don't make me a poor person. Atrifeni lechem chuki. Why should a person make such a request? It's nonsensical. A person should say, on the contrary, he doesn't want to be an ani, it's true. But why shouldn't he be an usher? Why shouldn't he be an usher? Why not? Atrifeni lechem chuki. There's some virtue in just having it meted out every day what you need. What kind of a virtue is that? Yeah. So what kind of request is this? So what's the answer?
The answer is that the request is not for the overt state, like we explained. What was the request for? The request was that he didn't want to become overcome by the fantasies of wealth, or to be overwhelmed by the necessities, by the person's needs. He shouldn't become desperate. Yeah. So why should a person request that? The answer is very simple. The answer is because there's only one thing there's only one perfection that such a state leads to. That's for Chachma. Chachma, knowledge, is something which the mind, in order for a person to gain knowledge, so he has to have a certain state. He has to have a certain state. The state is that a state in which he's free from both the emotional, being overcome by the emotional, and also being overcome by the physical necessities. Either state prevents him from being involved, from the mind being involved in what its own nature is to involve itself in, which is Chachma. The state of Chachma requires neither. The person's involved in the taivas, his mind isn't free. The mind can't operate. If a person, on the other hand, is involved in just trying to maintain himself, again, his mind isn't free. So the reason that Shlomo HaMelech made this request, what's the reason for the request? There can only be one objective, only one reason why he would ask for such a thing. If a person is involved in the world of Taiva, so he'd never say, don't make me an usher. Doesn't make any sense. A person who is looking for a certain state, a person that's looking for Chachma, you see, a person that's looking for the state of Chachma is the only one that would make such a request. So when it says, Shtayim sha'alti me'itach al timna mimeni b'terem amos, that was his request. His request was for Chachma. He said, I don't want to be overwhelmed by my emotions. I don't want to be overwhelmed by my needs. Why? Because then I'll be in the perfect state. What is the perfect state? Where the mind is free to simply pursue knowledge and to pursue what its own nature is to pursue. But in order to have that state, you can't be in either one of the extremes. Okay? So the whole purpose is in order to have Chayel Mabon is we have to be free. The mind has to be free. That is the perfect state. And it's true. That's why Biki Shiak of Leshu Vashavar is right. But that's something, well, over there means that sometimes the Ashgacha is such that for a particular tzaddik in a particular instance, it can't be that way. That's a different thing. But there's general principles. You see, that's what you have to differentiate between. That's what I was mentioning before. That many people have difficulties because, insofar as the moon is concerned, insofar as understanding what the Torah means, because they look at some certain principles in the Torah and then they see, on the contrary, it doesn't work out for certain people. There's certain tzaddikim that were poverty stricken, but I told you this. You have to be careful with the first answer too. There are many times what you think is poverty stricken is not. If the person is free to learn, then he's a very wealthy man. He's wealthier than the wealthiest millionaire because his life is free. And like the Rabbeinu Yonah says, he's involved in a totally world of tremendous happiness and joy. He's constantly seeing God's chachma. There's no greater state. So yeah, you can't. It doesn't matter how much. It's not a relative thing. But even so, there are certain times that a certain tzaddik doesn't have that. But that's the Ashgacha. That's Ashgacha Hashem. That was Yaakov Avinu, particular Ashgacha. But as a general principle is the brachas of the Torah we see. The brachas of the Torah can nothing be more general. That is the bracha. And you should be free from being pulled to both sides. And a person should strive to place himself in that state. That's why I say that's really what's wrong with a person involving himself in taivas. What's wrong with involving himself in taivas? Not the taiva per se that's out there. It means if a person involves himself in taivas, that energy is not only wasted energy, but it pulls him away from that equilibrium that he needs for thought and for pursuing chachma. Chachma requires a certain state of mind, not a state of pleasure and not a state of pain. Neither. He has to have a certain equilibrium, and that's what a person should strive for.
So that was, that's what Shlomo Melech asked for. That's what it meant. So therefore, what it means is like this. So he says like this. So it's true on two counts. It's true in terms of the Ashgacha, like the Rambam says, and it's true in a practical, from a practical standpoint also, that if a person is in a state of depravity, he's in a state where he doesn't have what he... I mean, a state of deprivation. I'm sorry, a state of deprivation. A person's state of deprivation... What it means, what the statement means is like this. A person called Mekayimus Tarmei Oni, it means like this. It means that the person doesn't have the fear of the pain of being in that state of deprivation. In other words, if he fears that state, if his emotional needs prevent him from being preoccupied with learning, then he'll never reach a state of perfection. In other words, let me put it this way. In practical terms, I see it all the time. What it means is that a person who has to follow along with the world's idea of success, a person that follows that pattern, and he does what he has to in terms of getting his education, and then getting involved in his profession, and he simply follows the way of the world, in terms of his needs, can never reach that perfection. Can never reach that perfection. I'm not saying that a person like that is not a worthwhile individual, could even be a tzaddik, but he will not be this level. This is a different level. Kol ha'makayim es ha'Torah me'oni sofo l'kan ha'me'osh is a different level. Not everybody can be self at this level. Like the Rambam says, when it comes to Talmud Torah, in the soul libo, if a person is on a high level, then he can reach that state of perfection. This is a special state. It means to say that there are individuals who do not follow the way of the world in terms of their success. They don't just follow along. Anyone who follows along the general established patterns, he goes for his education, he gets his parnasa, he has his job, he has his security. It means he follows the regular ways of life that society has created for him. That is not this individual. This individual is one that can go away from society, walk away from it. He sees that the main thing that is necessary for himself is Chochmas HaTorah, and he simply can't give up on Chochmas HaTorah, no matter how difficult it is, even if it means forfeiting his future. He has to, his future in terms of what the world considers future. It's not important to him. What he's interested in is one thing. He's interested in Chochmah. And what the Mishnah says is that, on the contrary, you would think that such an individual would have a very sorry results. But no, just the opposite is true. That this individual, because he involves himself, because he walks away from the security of society that society offers him, and because he involves himself in Torah, on the contrary, he will be an individual that in the end will be wealthy and will be able to sit and learn without being involved in his daily needs, whereas the other individual who follows the ways of the world will never get out of it. He'll never be able to. That's the second part of the memra. It means that the other individual simply can't escape. It requires a certain type of person. I'm not saying that everyone can do such a thing. Neither is the Mishnah saying that. But it means that's exactly the type of person that it's referring to. It requires a tremendous amount of courage for a person to do that. But it means to say that a person that does do that, in the end, will have true success. Whereas the other person will never be successful. He'll be successful in the ways of the world, yes. But an inner success he'll never have. That's what Rabbeinu Yona basically says. Rabbeinu Yona says that, he says, Kipan asasati amarubo v'lo yitzhar chal yigi akapov ki yochal v'yilmod b'simcho v'tuv levov. You see? He'll eat and he'll drink with happiness, but tuv levav, great satisfaction, great personal happiness. Ki b'chochma yilo kol tuv. Because with chochma he'll have everything. Whereas the other individual will have what he bargained for. He followed the way of society, followed it very secure, his profession, took care of himself very well, but he will never have this. A different kind of a thing? The other person, I'm not saying society basically is made up of the other type of people on the whole. But this is speaking about a special type of individual. The Mishnah is referring to a special type of person.
Like the Rambam says, the Rambam refers to this person in the end of Chashmit Yavol, a person that decides that this is the only thing he wants in life, and that's it. So he says, so he has a special Ashgacha that things will work out for him. That's what the Rambam says. But basically, it's that.